Hello and welcome to The Dress Circle. This is Michael Kanacki.
And this is Ted Otten.
And that piece you just heard was called Welcome Yule. It was performed by the Royal Choral Society, conducted by Sir Malcolm Sargent. And it was a 15th century carol and party song. And we're going to have a party of sorts today because we're playing our annual holiday musical memories. And it's a combination of song and spoken word.
Last year, our entire program was devoted to the original holiday musicals written for television. And one of the songs that we featured then was this song from a TV musical called The Stingiest Man in Town. And that musical featured Basil Rathbone as Scrooge. But Johnny Desmond played his nephew Fred, and he sang this song. It's called An Old-Fashioned Christmas. Here's Johnny Desmond and the chorus from the original cast recording of The Stingiest Man in Town.
An old-fashioned Christmas with snow falling hard on scenery looking like a pretty Christmas card. An old-fashioned angel on top of a tree.
Christmas with snow falling hard on scenery looking like a pretty Christmas card. An old-fashioned angel on top of a tree and candlelight shining down on friends surrounding me. An old-fashioned love song to sing as we go, and tenderly steal a Christmas kiss beneath the mistletoe. That's just what I wish
for. That's just what I wish.
And now it's come true.
And now it's come true.
An old-fashioned Christmas time that I can spend with you.
Kiss beneath the mistletoe.
That's just what I wish
for.
And now it's come true.
And now it's come true.
An old-fashioned Christmas time that I can spend.
Johnny Desmond and the chorus sang An Old-Fashioned Christmas from the TV musical The Stingiest Man in Town.
We decided to include one other song from a TV musical only because we like it a great deal. It was written by Richard Adler for his then-wife, Sally Ann Howes. She sings it with Alan Case. The song is Christmas in Your Heart, and it comes from the original television cast recording of Gift of the Magi.
Chestnuts, I smell chestnuts in the air. Though there are no sleigh bells, I hear sleigh bells everywhere. When there's Christmas in your heart, the world is beautiful, so beautiful. Even if there's no snow at all, close your eyes nice and tight. Start to to wish with all your might, and you'll find to your delight snow will fall. When there's Christmas in your heart, you found a brand new gift, a brand new lift. And don't you lose that glow, whatever you do. Let Christmas Eve give you your start, and keep that Christmas in your heart.
Sally Ann Howes and Alan Case from the original cast of Gift of the Magi on TV with Christmas in Your Heart.
For many years, we featured a recording of Ronald Colman starring as Scrooge in a radio broadcast of A Christmas Carol based on the novella by Charles Dickens. But this year, we've switched our allegiance to another British actor. This year, we're going to hear Scrooge, performed by Sir Laurence Olivier in a 1953 radio broadcast. The adaptation of the Charles Dickens novella was done by Derek Patmore, and the music was composed and conducted by Sidney Torch. So here is our, at popular request, new version of A Christmas Carol.
Marley was dead to begin with, dead as a doornail. There was no doubt whatever about that. The register of his burial had been signed by Scrooge himself, and his name was good for anything that he chose to put his hand to. Old Marley was as dead as a doornail. But first, let me tell you about Scrooge himself. Oh, but he was a tight-fisted hand of the grindstones, he was. A squeezing, wrenching, grasping, scraping, clutching, covetous old sinner. The cold within him froze his old features, nipped his pointed nose, shriveled his cheek, and stiffened his gait. He iced the office of his counting house in the hot days, and he certainly didn't thaw it one degree at Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Uncle. God save you.
Ah, humbug.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? You don't mean that, I'm sure.
I do. Merry Christmas. What right have you to be merry? You're poor enough.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Tomorrow is Christmas Day. Come and dine with
us. I'll see you far enough. Good afternoon.
But why not? We've never had any quarrel, to which I've been a party.
Good afternoon.
Well, you'll be very welcome. Merry Christmas, Uncle.
Ah! Good afternoon.
Leith Scrooge's nephew found his Christmas greetings cordially returned by Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit. Even though he was freezing to death in his unheated corner of the office and earned only 15 shillings a week. In showing the young man out, however, Bob Cratchit let two other people in. They were portly gentlemen and greeted Scrooge in a friendly way.
This festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, we like to make some provision for the poor and destitute. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries.
Are there no prisons?
Oh, plenty of prisons.
And the union workhouses, are they still in operation?
Oh, yes, indeed. But many can't go there, and many would rather die.
If they'd rather die, then they'd better do it and decrease the surplus population.
Oh.
Good afternoon.
Oh.
Thank you. that was the way that Scrooge felt on Christmas Eve. At length, the hour of shutting up his counting house arrived. With an ill will, he dismounted from his stool and tacitly admitted the fact to his clerk, Bob Cratchit.
You want the day off tomorrow, I suppose.
If quite convenient,
it's
sir.
Not convenient, and it is not fair. If I was to stop half a crown for it, you'd think yourself ill-used, I'll be bound.
Well, it's only once a year, sir.
Bah! Humbug!
Scrooge went off to his melancholy dinner in his usual melancholy tavern, and having read all the newspapers, went home to his bed. His house was old and dreary, for nobody lived in it but Scrooge, the other rooms being all let out as offices. As he opened the door, he suddenly started, for the door knocker seemed to leer at him through the fog, and the face of the knocker had changed to the face of his one-time partner, Jacob Marley. And Jacob Marley had been dead as a doornail for 7 years. Scrooge hurried up to his room and locked the door behind him.
Gracious me, what's that? All the bells ringing this time of night?
A clanking of heavy chains up the stairs, along the passage to the locked door of his room. A ghostly figure suddenly appearing through the door and standing there in front of him. No need to ask who it was. It was the ghost of Jacob Marley. Marley in his pigtail, usual waistcoat, tights and boots, clasping a chain about his middle, a chain made up of cash boxes, keys, padlocks, and heavy purses wrought in steel. But a Jacob Marley that was transparent.
In life, I was your partner, Jacob Marley.
You are fettered. What is that chain you bear?
I wear the chain I forged in life. I made it link by link and yard by yard, and of my own free will I bore it. Would you know the weight and length of the chain you bear yourself? It was full as heavy and as long as this, 7 Christmas Eves ago, and you have labored on it ever since.
Jacob, speak comfort to me, Jacob.
I have none to give. I am here tonight to warn you that you have yet a chance and hope of escaping my fate, Ebenezer.
You were always a good friend to me, Jacob. Thank you.
You will be haunted by 3 spirits.
Haunted? I think I'd rather not be, Jacob.
Without their visits, you cannot hope to shun the path I tread. Expect the first one tomorrow when the bell tolls 1.
Couldn't I take them all at once and have it over, Jacob?
Expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. Look to see me no more, and look that for your own sake you remember what has passed between us.
The specter vanished. In fear and trembling, Scrooge undressed and went to bed. By the time he had fallen asleep, it was past 2 o'clock in the morning. When he woke, it was still pitch dark, but he heard the clock of a neighboring church distinctly striking 12. 12? Midnight? What heavens above? He'd slept the clock round almost twice. It was tomorrow night already, and when the clock chimed the next hour, the first of the 3 spirits would appear. Scrooge lay there in his bed in the dark and waited, considering that he could no more go to sleep than go to heaven. Suddenly, the curtains of his bed were drawn aside, and Scrooge, starting up in his bed, found himself face to face with the unearthly visitor who drew them back.
Are you the spirit, sir, whose coming was foretold to me?
I am.
Who and what are you?
I am the ghost of Christmas past. Rise and come with me.
It was a strange figure that led him out into the night. Clad in his slippers, dressing gown, and nightcap, a figure like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man shrunk to the size of a child. It wore a tunic of the purest white and carried a branch of fresh green holly in his hand. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light, which was probably why it used, in its duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which it carried the rest of the time under its arm.
Why, I know this place. I was a boy here. And that house there, it's where I went to school.
Strange that you have forgotten it for so long. The school is not quite deserted. A solitary child is still there, neglected by his friends.
Is it me?
It was you, but listen.
Dear, dear brother, I've come to bring you home for Christmas.
Home?
Yes, home for good and all. Home forever and ever. Father's so much kinder than he used to be that home's like heaven. Last night he said you might come home and sent me in a coach to bring you, and we're to have the merriest time in all the world.
My little sister, she had a large heart. Poor little sister. She died a woman and had children, I believe.
One child.
True. He is your nephew.
More, the spirit led him away, back through the night into the city they had left. It was plain enough by the brightly lit shop windows that it was Christmas time again. They stopped before a warehouse door.
Why, that's old Fezziwig's place, where I was apprenticed. Dear old Fezziwig, bless his heart, alive again.
Yo-ho there, Ebenezer. Dick, no more work tonight. It's Christmas Eve, young Ebenezer. Let's have the shutters up before a man can say Jack Robinson. Hilly-ho, clear away, my lads. Hilly-ho, Dick. Cheer up, Ebenezer.
All was done in a moment. Everything moved out of the way, the floor swept and watered, the lamps trimmed, fuel heaped on the fire, and the warehouse turned into as snug and warm a ballroom as you could desire to see on a winter's night.
A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small?
Why, isn't it? He's only spent some £3 or £4 of your mortal money. Does that deserve such praise?
It isn't that spirit. He had the power to make us happy or unhappy, to make our service a pleasure or a toil. Oh, dear.
What's the matter?
Nothing particular. I should just like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now, Bob Cratchit. There is. Remove me from this place.
These are the shadows of things that have been. If they are what they are, don't blame me.
Remove me. I cannot bear it. Take me back. Haunt me no longer.
The flame that burned so bright upon the spirit of Christmas past was more than Scrooge could bear. Seizing the large extinguisher that it carried, Scrooge pressed it violently down upon the spirit's head. But though he pressed it down with all his force, he could not hide the light which streamed in an unbroken flood upon the ground. Suddenly he realized that he was back in his own bedroom. He gave the extinguisher a final squeeze, reeled across to his bed, and sank into a heavy sleep. Awaking in the middle of a prodigiously tough snore and sitting up in bed to get his thoughts together, Scrooge did not need to be told that the bell was again upon the stroke of one. He felt that he was restored to consciousness in the nick of time for the special purpose of holding a conference with the second messenger dispatched to him through Jacob Marley's intervention. But this time he did not wait for the spectre to do it. He drew back the curtains of his bed himself. Being prepared for almost anything, Scrooge was by no means prepared for nothing. He lay there trembling in the dark until he noticed the light which shone beneath the door of his sitting room. He got up softly and shuffled in his slippers towards the chink.
Come in, my good fellow. I am the ghost of Christmas present. Look upon me.
Scrooge reverently did so. In easy state upon his couch, there sat a jolly giant, glorious to see, who bore a glowing torch, in shape not unlike Plenty's horn, which shed its light throughout the room. But what a room it had become! The walls hung with mistletoe and holly, a mighty blaze roaring up the chimney, and the floor heaped up with turkeys, geese, great joints of meat, mince pies, plum puddings, barrels of oysters, and seething bowls of punch.
Spirit, conduct me where you will. I went forth last night on compulsion, and I learnt a lesson which is working now. Tonight, if you have aught to teach me, let me profit by it.
Then touch my robe.
Holly, mistletoe, turkeys, and plum puddings all vanished instantly, and out into the night they flew over the twinkling lights of the great city. It was a remarkable quality of the ghost that, notwithstanding his gigantic size, he could accommodate himself to any place with ease, and that he stood beneath a low roof quite as gracefully as in a lofty hall, which was just as well, for in a moment they were standing there in the dining room of Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit, and his family.
Merry Christmas, all.
Merry Christmas.
Now then, Belinda, take Tiny Tim and Martha and show them what they're going to eat for dinner. Oh, yes. If that doesn't make their mouths water, nothing will. And how did little Tim behave at church, my dear?
As good as gold and better. He told me coming home that he hoped the people saw him in church because he was a cripple and it might be pleasant to them to remember upon Christmas Day who made lame beggars walk and blind men see.
The poor little mite. How good he is. Come along, all of you. Dinner's nearly ready, I'll be bound.
A Merry Christmas to us all, my dears. God bless us.
God bless us, everyone.
Spirit, Tiny Tim is a cripple and so very pale and sickly. Tell me if he will live.
I see a vacant seat in the chimney corner and a crutch without an owner carefully preserved. If these shadows remain unaltered by the future, the child will die.
No, no. Oh, no, kind spirit. Say he will be spared.
Why should he be? If he dies, it will decrease the surplus population.
Now then, one and all, I give you a toast. Mr. Scrooge, the founder of the feast.
The founder of the feast, indeed. I wish I had him here.
Oh, my dear, the children, and it's Christmas Day.
Oh, well, for your sake and the day's, then, not for his. A Merry Christmas to him. He'll be very merry, I'll be bound.
Oh, that's better, my dear. To Mr. Scrooge.
Mr. Scrooge.
I never knew that people could be so happy. But, Spirit, you're looking sad and old. Your hair has turned white.
Oh, it is nearly midnight when I shall die and become myself no more than a shadow.
Who are those unhappy, frightened, cowering children there in rags behind you? Are they yours, Spirit?
They are mankind's. Their names are Ignorance and Want. Beware of them, for they are vicious.
Have they no refuge or resource?
Are there no prisons? Are there no workhouses? Oh. Farewell.
The Spirit of Christmas Present had vanished. In its place, there stood the last of Scrooge's three expected visitors, the ghost of Christmas yet to come. It was shrouded in a deep black garment which concealed its face, its form, and left nothing of it visible save one outstretched hand. But unlike the other spirits, this one spoke never a word.
Ghost of the future, I fear you more than any other specter I have seen. But as I know your purpose is to do me good, and as I hope to live to be another man from what I was, lead on.
Again the scene had changed. And now Scrooge found himself in the room of death itself. A pale light, rising from the outer air, fell straight upon the bed. And on it, plundered and bereft, unwatched, unwept, uncared for, was the body of a man. A filthy old sheet lay over the face, and the phantom motioned to Scrooge to draw it back.
Oh, no, I dare not. This is a fearful place. In leaving it, I shall not leave its lesson, believe me, Spirit. Let me see some tenderness connected with a death. Please, I beg you, Spirit.
Poor little Tiny Tim. You went today again, Robert?
Yes, my dear. I wish you could have gone. It would have done you good to see how green a place it is, but you'll see it often. I promised him that I would walk there on a Sunday. Poor Tiny Tim, my little child.
Poor little Tiny Tim. If only I'd known, Spectre. Something tells me our parting moment is at hand. I know it, but I know not how. Tell me, what man was that whom we saw there lying dead? A gravestone? Before I read the name upon it, Spectre, answer me one question. Are these the shadows of the things that will be, or are they shadows of the things that may be only? You do not answer, only point.
then I must read the name upon this grave. Ebenezer Scrooge. No, spirit, no, no. Spirit, hear me. I'm not the man I was. I'll not be the man I must have been but for this intercourse. Why show me this if I'm past all hope? Good spirit, assure me that I may yet change these shadows you have shown me by an altered life. I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. Oh, tell me I may sponge away the writing on this stone.
And holding up his hands in one last prayer to have his fate reversed, Scrooge saw an alteration in the phantom's hood and dress. It shrunk, collapsed, and dwindled down to a bedpost. Yes, and the bedpost was his own. The bed was his own. The room was his own. A bright, shining morning, and the bells of the town pealing out there beyond his window.
Oh, how long have they been sleeping? What day of the month is it? Hey! What's today, my fine young fellow?
Today? Why, Christmas Day.
Christmas Day? I haven't missed it. The spirits have done it all in one night after all. Hello, then.
Hello.
Do you know the poulterers in the next street? Now, of course you do, an intelligent boy. Well, do you know whether they sold the big prize turkey they had there yesterday night?
It's hanging there now, mister.
It is? Then go and buy it. Here's a shilling. Come back with the man. Half a crown for you if you have that turkey in less than 5 minutes.
Right.
I'll send it to Bob Cratchit's, and he shan't know who sent it. It's twice the size of Tiny Tim. Too big for the boy to carry it there? Well, let him take a cab. Half a crown for the cabby and another shilling for the boy and his trouble. What was the name of the man who came round asking for a subscription? Well, I'll soon find out. And £100 for the poor when I do. No. Better make it 100 guineas. Only anonymously. Gracious, look at the time, and I haven't yet shaved. I must hurry, or I'll be late for that wonderful dinner with nephew Fred and his wife. I'll be round there in a twinkling, and won't they be surprised when I burst in shouting, "A Merry Christmas, everyone!" And won't Bob Cratchit be surprised tomorrow when I'm waiting for him there at the office and raise his wages on the spot? Oh, goodness, what have I done with my life till now? Was ever such a wonderful time of the year as Christmas?
Scrooge had no further need of intercourse with the spirit, but lived upon the total abstinence principle ever afterwards. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well if any man alive possessed that knowledge. May that truly be said of us and all of us. And so, as Tiny Tim observed,
God bless us, everyone.
This is Laurence Olivier again, speaking to you from London on Christmas Eve. Each of us here in the studio joins with me in wishing you a very happy Christmas. And in the words of Tiny Tim himself, God bless us, everyone.
A perennial holiday favorite is Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. You heard a 1953 radio broadcast featuring Sir Laurence Olivier, and although we've tried hard, we cannot find the names of the supporting cast. The adaptation was done by Derek Patmore, and the music was composed and conducted by Sidney Torch.
This is Michael Kanacki.
And this is Ted Otten.
And you're listening to some holiday musical memories on The Dress Circle. Well, we'll turn to Broadway now. After all, we are primarily a Broadway show, well, stage musicals. And we'll go to one of our favorite songs that comes from A Year with Frog and Toad by the Reale Brothers. Here we have Jay Good, Mark Lynn Baker, and the company to sing Merry Almost Christmas.
Felt as though there'd be no Christmas, even though it's Christmas Eve. No, it wouldn't feel like Christmas, not without you, I believe. Christmas wouldn't come without you, only winter's cold I fear. But it really feels like Christmas now that you are here. Sure, it's cold, but we've hot chocolate and a fire burning away. By the fire, see the clock lit. Now it's almost Christmas Day. Merry almost Christmas. Happy that you're here. Merry almost Christmas. Happy almost New Year. Christmas feels like Christmas now that you are here. Merry almost Christmas. Happy almost New Year. I could not imagine Christmas. Couldn't do it if I tried. No, I can't imagine Christmas, not without you at my side. I'll be with you every Christmas. We both know that's understood. Many, many nights like this one, if we're lucky, knock on wood. Sure, it's cold, but we've hot chocolate and a fire burning away. By the fire, see the clock lit. Now it's almost Christmas Day.
Merry almost Christmas. Happy that you're here. Merry almost Christmas. Happy almost New Year. Christmas feels like Christmas now that we are here. Merry almost Christmas. Happy almost New Year.
It's midnight. Merry Christmas, Frog. Merry Christmas, Toad.
Happy almost New Year.
That was Merry Almost Christmas, and it is almost Christmas, performed by Jay Good, Mark Lynn Baker, and the company from A Year with Frog and Toad.
One of the things that we're grateful for is our friend and engineer, Winifred Howard. And she and I share a fondness for a song that is definitely an earworm. Once you hear it, it gets in your head for the rest of the day, and only a good sleep will erase it. This recording comes from an interesting CD called Dr. Demento Presents Greatest Christmas Novelty CD of All Time. And it's a young lady named Gayla Peavy who sings, and probably means it, I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas.
Only a hippopotamus will do. Don't want a doll, no dinky tinker toy. I want a hippopotamus. front door, that's the easy thing to do. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. And hippopotamuses like me too. Mom says a hippo would eat me up, but then teacher says a hippo is a vegetarian. And wash him there and give him his massage. I can see me now on Christmas morning creeping down the stairs. Oh, what joy and what surprise when I open up my eyes to see a hippo hero standing there. I want a hippopotamus for Christmas. Only a hippopotamus will do. I only like hippopotamuses, and hippopotamuses like me too.
You heard 10-year-old Gayla Peavy sing I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas, one of the gifts that we share with our friend and engineer, Winifred Howard.
We're going to go back to 1950, and I heard this as a recording. Obviously, I wasn't here in 50. And when I heard this recording first, I fell in love with it, and I found many of you have fallen in love with this as well. We're going to another spoken word piece with, well, probably one of the best interpreters of Dickens I've ever heard, Charles Laughton. He's going to be reading selections from the posthumous papers of the Pickwick Club, specifically Mr. Pickwick's Christmas. Music is conducted and arranged by Hans Eisler, and it's just such a lovely piece, and I hope you enjoy it as well.
A happy party they were that night. The best sitting room at Manor Farm was a good, long, dark-paneled room with a high chimney-piece and a capacious chimney up which you could have driven one of the new patent cabs, wheels and all. At the upper end of the room, seated in a shady bower of holly and evergreens, were the two best fiddlers and the only harp in all Muggleton. In all sorts of recesses and on all kinds of brackets stood massive old silver candlesticks with four branches each. The carpet was up, the candles burned bright, the fire blazed and crackled on the hearth, and merry voices and light-hearted laughter rang through the room. If anything could have added to the interest of this agreeable scene, it would have been the remarkable fact of Mr. Pickwick's appearing without his gaiters, for the first time within the memory of his oldest friends. "You mean to dance?" said Wardle. "Of course I do," replied Mr. Pickwick. "Don't you see I'm dressed for the purpose?" Mr. Pickwick called attention to his speckled silk stockings and smartly tied pumps. "Oh, you in silk stockings?" exclaimed Mr. Tupman jocosely. "And why not, sir?" "Why not?" said Mr. Pickwick, turning warmly upon him. "Oh, of course there's no reason why you shouldn't wear them," responded Mr. Tupman. "I imagine not, sir. I imagine not," said Mr. Pickwick in a very peremptory tone. Mr. Tupman had contemplated a laugh, but he found it was a serious matter. So he looked grave and said they were a very pretty pattern. "I hope they are," said Mr. Pickwick, fixing his eyes upon his friend. "You see nothing extraordinary in the stockings as stockings, I trust, sir?"
"Certainly not.
Certainly not, replied Mr. Tupman. He walked away, and Mr. Pickwick's countenance resumed its customary benign expression. We're all ready, I believe, said Mr. Pickwick, who was stationed with the old lady at the top of the dance and had already made 4 false starts in his excessive anxiety to commence. Then begin at once, said Wardle. Now. Up struck the 2 fiddles and the 1 harp, and off went Mr. Pickwick and the hands across, when there was a general clapping of hands and a cry of stop, stop. What's the matter, said Mr. Pickwick, who was only brought to by the fiddles and harp desisting and could have been stopped by no other earthly power if the house had been on fire. Where's Arabella Allen? Cried a dozen voices. And Winkle, added Mr. Tupman. Here we are, exclaimed that gentleman, emerging with his pretty companion from the corner. As he did so, it would have been hard to tell which was the redder in the face, he or a young lady with black eyes. What an extraordinary thing it is, Winkle, said Mr. Pickwick rather pettishly, that you couldn't have taken your place before. Not at all extraordinary, said Mr. Winkle. Well, said Mr. Pickwick, with a very expressive smile as his eyes rested on Arabella, well, I don't know that it was extraordinary either, after all. However, there was no time to think more about the matter, for the fiddles and harp began in real earnest. Away went Mr. Pickwick. Hands across, down the middle to the very end of the room and halfway up the chimney. Back again to the door. Fusette everywhere. Loud stamp on the ground. Ready for the next couple. Off again. All the figure over once more. Another stamp to beat out the time. Next couple and the next again. Never was such going. From the center of the ceiling, old Wardle had suspended with his own hands a huge branch of mistletoe. And this same branch of mistletoe gave rise to a scene of general and most delightful struggling and confusion. Mr. Pickwick took the old lady by the hand, led her beneath the mystic branch, and saluted her in all courtesy and decorum. The old lady submitted to this piece of practical politeness with all the dignity which befitted so important and serious a solemnity. But the younger ladies, not being so thoroughly imbued with a superstitious veneration for the custom, or imagining that the value of a salute is very much enhanced if it cost a little trouble to obtain it, screamed and struggled and ran into corners and threatened and remonstrated and did everything but leave the room until some of the less adventurous gentlemen were on the point of desisting, when they all at once found it useless to resist any longer and submitted to be kissed with a good grace. Mr. Winkle kissed the young lady with the black eyes. Mr. Snodgrass kissed Emily. And Mr. Weller, not being particular about the form of being under the mistletoe, kissed Emma and the other female servants just as he caught them. As to the poor relations, they kissed everybody, not even accepting the plainer portions of the young lady visitors, who in their excessive confusion ran right under the mistletoe without knowing it. Wardle stood with his back to the fire, surveying the whole scene with the utmost satisfaction, and the fat boy took the opportunity of appropriating to his own use and summarily devouring a particularly fine mince pie that had been carefully put by for somebody else. Now the screaming had subsided, and faces were in a glow, and curls in a tangle. And Mr. Pickwick, after kissing the old lady as before mentioned, was standing under the mistletoe, looking with a very pleased countenance on all that was passing around him, when the young lady with the black eyes, after a little whispering with the other young ladies, made a sudden dart forward, and putting her arm round Mr. Pickwick's neck, saluted him affectionately on the left cheek. And before Mr. Pickwick distinctly knew what was the matter, he was surrounded by the whole body and kissed by every one of them. It was a pleasant thing to see Mr. Pickwick in the center of the group, now pulled this way and then that, and first kissed on the chin and then on the nose and then on the spectacles, and to hear the peals of laughter which were raised on every side. When they were all tired, there was a great game at Snapdragon, and when fingers enough were burned with that and all the raisins were gone, they sat down by the huge fire of blazing logs to a substantial supper and a mighty bowl of wassail, something smaller than an ordinary washhouse copper, in which the hot apples were hissing and bubbling with a rich look and a jolly sound that were perfectly irresistible. This, said Mr. Pickwick, looking around him, this is indeed comfort. Our invariable custom at Christmas time, replied Mr. Wardle. Winkle, my boy, Break up the fire. Up flew the bright sparks in myriads as the logs were stirred. The deep red blaze sent forth a rich glow that penetrated into the farthest corner of the room and cast its cheerful tint on every face.
With music conducted and arranged by Hans Eisler, that was Charles Laughton reading selections from the posthumous papers of the Pickwick Club, specifically Mr. Pickwick's Christmas.
I guess Charles Dickens is the official Christmas author of all time, and that was a very good example, because his novella, A Christmas Carol, has inspired quite a few musicals, and one of them is a British musical by Leslie Bricusse called Scrooge, and some of our local theaters have productions of that show this year. It features a song that's going to be very relevant in a couple of days, and that's December the 25th. From the London original cast recording, we're going to hear David Oakley, Sally Mates, and the company sing December the 25th.
Mrs. Heatherwick, my dear friends, there will now be happiness and contentment in this room, the likes of which none of us has ever seen before.
Consumption of fewer than 6 cakes, 3 litres of punch per person will be penalised by instant dismissal from the party.
Landed! Begin! Of all the days in all the year that I'm familiar with, there's only one that's really fun.
December the 25th.
Correct.
Ask anyone called Robinson or Brown or Jones or Smith their favourite day and they will say
December the 25th.
Correct.
December the 25th, my dear, December the 25th. The dearest day in all the year. December the 25th.
Correct.
December the 25th.
At times we're glad to see the back of all our kin and kith.
But there's a date we celebrate,
December the 25th.
Correct.
At times our friends may seem to be devoid of wit and pith,
but all of us are humorous,
December the 25th.
Correct.
December the 25th, my dear's December the 25th, the dearest day in all the year. December the 25th.
Correct.
December the 25th, my dear's December the 25th.
December the
25th. Correct. I don't hear any arguments, so may I say for me, I wish that every day could be December the 25th.
From the London original cast recording of Scrooge by Leslie Bricusse, you heard David Oakley, Sally Mates, and the company with December the 25th.
I don't know why I associate the next song with Christmas, but I have ever since I was a child. It's a piece by Leon Jessel. It's called The Parade of the Wooden Soldiers, and here we have an older recording of it performed by the International Novelty Orchestra. Thank you. Perhaps I associate it with a cartoon from my misspent youth, but I have always associated the parade of wooden soldiers as part of the Christmas, and I'm happy to have that. Leon Jessel's composition performed by the International Novelty Orchestra.
My father spent World War II as an airplane technician in Gander, Newfoundland, and he told me that he heard this recording as a radio broadcast in the holiday season immediately following his return from World War II. Here is Frank Sinatra and the chorus to sing Going Home.
Wherever we may be along about this time of year, our hearts become sentimental pilgrims and head for home. Because home is where we all discovered that Christmas is one time of the year when we don't have to be wealthy to be rich. Some of us remember Christmas as the time when Dad gave us our first gold watch. Others remember it as the time when a charity organization delivered a Christmas basket to the doorstep before dawn so the neighbors wouldn't see and Mother wouldn't be embarrassed. But whether the hearth that cheered your family was a fireplace of marble or a kitchen stove of cast iron, you'll remember that your home was the richest place on earth, warmed by the richest spirit on earth, the spirit of Christmas. And that's why I've chosen this next song to sing as a Christmas song. It's not a carol, it's just a beautiful pathway of friendly and understanding music up which our hearts may travel as they make their Yuletide pilgrimage going home.
Lots of folk gathered there, all the friends I knew.
Frank Sinatra and the chorus sang Going Home. And we're going to close with a song written by Irving Berlin from a film called Holiday Inn. This is a Regina music box, and this was one of my grandmother's prized possessions, playing White Christmas.
Thank you for joining us. We hope you enjoyed our holiday musical memories and that you'll join us next week for encouragement songs for the new year. Right now, we're wishing you happy holidays from the Dress Circle.
The Dress Circle is produced weekly by Otnacki Productions at WWFM, Trenton, New Jersey.